Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 3, Episode 4, Vindicators 3, The Return of Worldender. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Rick and Morty are summoned by the Vindicators, an elite team of superheroes who have saved the galaxy on several occasions. Rick is reluctant to join the fight against the Worldender, but Morty looks up to the Vindicators as actual heroes as opposed to Rick's more chaotic neutral alignment, and invokes his right to direct every tenth adventure in order to heed their call. Once assembled, Rick's jealousy over Morty's affections causes him to put the Vindicators through a grueling and gruesome Saw-esque chain of puzzles designed to reveal the heroes as just as selfish and fallible as Rick himself. Rick succeeds not only in destroying the Vindicators as a team, but also Morty's dwindling faith in the concept of goodness itself.
All right, Aaron, what do you think about the Vindicators?
This is a solid meat and potatoes Rick and Morty episode that may rank higher or lower depending on how into the whole superhero zeitgeist that you are. And I know that I'm pretty into it and you're pretty meh. So I imagine I liked the episode a bit more than you liked it.
Are you saying I'm the Rick and you're the Morty here?
Sure.
Okay. That's not totally unfair.
Maybe not so much in the chaotic neutral, but in the skepticism of superheroes and their daring do, sure.
Yeah, and yet, you know, I see everyone that comes out. I found this episode to be maybe the lowest low personally for Rick. Like, I think that everything Rick does in this episode is pretty awful. Mm-hmm. And in a more personally offensive way than he usually does it. It's just
the
person that Rick is in this episode, I feel, is insufferable. Just the worst. And I would never want to hang out with this person.
Yeah, and he's... Yeah.
Whereas some of their adventures, I'm like, oh, cool. Okay, yeah, Rick's a cynic and he's a nihilist, but this adventure is fun and it'd be fine to go on it. Not this one.
And you kind of expect that there is going to be some kind of like sweetening of Rick by the end, mm-hmm. you know, that he's going to have like his affections for Morty are going to be tested, or there's going to be something to hang the hat on. But it's just I don't know. One of the things I thought was going to be will be interesting to discuss is what the Vindicators actually being kind of shitty people themselves does to the message of the episode. But yeah, like they're all solid gags about superheroes, but without being like just kind of dumb parodies of them.
Yeah.
Like there's some kind of insightful things, and they do the thing that like Dan Harmon does so well, which is take, you know, well-worn material we've seen in other places. Like we've seen tons of lovers' quarrels. We've even seen like very heightened, you know, in the golden age of television and movies, just heightened absurd love triangles and whatnot, but we've never seen like one between a million ants and a ghost train conductor and a supernova woman. And just like it's funny, it just in the same way, you know, it's kind of funny to hear like a regular domestic argument. You know, it's that much funnier when you've got these people in these high profile superhero positions doing it. So there's a lot of humor just in juxtaposition, regular high drama with the melodrama of superheroes, which I quite enjoyed. Before we get into the episode, there's a bit of sad news that's befell the Rick and Morty community within the last week. Mike Mendel passed away just 2 days shy of his 55th birthday. If you didn't know it, Mike was a line producer on Rick and Morty, as well as The Simpsons. His work in the industry goes all the way back to The Tracy Ullman Show, apparently where he got his first break. Mike was an Emmy winner with over 25 years of experience in the industry, and he won his fourth Emmy for the 2018 Rick and Morty season and produced a total of 22 episodes of the show. I saw that Justin Roiland, you know, one of the obviously co-creators of Rick and Morty, tweeted a little tribute to him over the weekend. My friend, partner, and line producer Mike Mendel passed away. I'm devastated. My heart breaks for his family. I don't know what I'm going to do without you by my side, Mike. I am destroyed. I think we can all agree that 55 is far too young to pass on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he leaves behind his wife and their two children, so we'll be thinking about them, and rest in peace, Mike. Okay, let's talk about The Vindicators 3, Return of the Worldender. So let's talk about the superheroes literally themselves. It seemed like it was the writer's intention to not just like do parodies, like Mad Magazine-style parodies of superheroes, but to come up with a team... kind of like what Alan Moore did with The Watchmen, where it's like, these are a plausible superhero team that you would probably be stoked to read if they had their own little comic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The humor only comes in the absurd situations they find themselves in. And I like how Rick... He contrasts these guys with himself by saying, well, I guess my ability is I can do anything... But my limitation is only when I want. So, you know, Rick sees himself as above these people, that essentially every one of these are just lesser, more gimmicky versions of what he can already bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. He sees himself as the, you know, the Superman.
Yeah.
The one who doesn't really need the rest of the team.
Right. Even though he's like the Batman version of that. Like his mind provides him with all the power that he needs. I like, there's a whole lot of like great scenes where like I love their Avenger style team up when they infiltrate the base. Like, you know, Supernova summons some kind of cosmic storm. Alan has a train bust into the outer wall of the base. Million Ant Man is a scout and he gets shot up. And there's this like, I've lost 400 ants. Queen is laying more. And that's very comic booky. You know, like comic book characters love narrating what they're doing and how their powers are working. Like, I've taken massive damage, but the power cosmic is stitching my body back together. And that's a reference to that. And then I love when it's time for Rick to shine. Like, he gets his like pocket laboratory out and he does all this science, but it's just to make this like tadpole he squeezes into his eyes to treat his runaway. Right. His runaway hangover before he gets down to do the actual thing that destroys the turrets.
And that's so matter of fact too, right? It's just like, Rick, can you help out? Sure, let me fix my eyes, and then I'm just gonna drop this thing on the ground. And it's gonna do it.
Right.
Like,
right.
There's no, I'm gonna pull out my X-speed defibrillator that's going to attach to the turrets
and take. Right.
He doesn't do any of that. He just. Does it.
Yeah, he fails. He refuses to participate in any of the superheroics, period.
Yeah.
Even starting from like, there's a lot of talk about the literal call to adventure because they have this like world, the Vindicator's beacon. and he just refuses to contribute to any of the pageantry. Especially, I was going to say even though, but I think especially once he realizes that Morty is completely bought into these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, as just heroes. And, you know, like there's this argument where Rick feels like they're arguing about like facts and logic and semantics and or like, you know, against the Vindicator's self-image of themselves. And Morty's like, no, Rick, I'm the ones calling them heroes. They're my heroes. I see them as heroes. And
that kind of kicks off the rest of the entire episode, right? Like,
right.
This plan that Rick hatches after he goes and gets so drunk that he can't remember what he did.
Right.
Yeah, and maybe we can use that as a springboard to talk, you know, more about Rick, because that's very much a, like, one of the things I realized is Rick cares more about being needed than wanted during this episode. And, you know, that's not a quality I find super attractive in people, but you can go to either extreme with that. You can value being wanted too much.
Yeah, it can. It ties into the Pickle Rick stuff too, where like, you know, Beth was like one of the things that she admires and is a matter of consternation is that Rick doesn't need anyone for anything, and that seems like that's a big currency in their relationship. It's like,
oh, it's all about power. I mean,
right?
Like this idea that he values being needed. Is a power play, right? Like he doesn't need anything because that would show his weakness. That would mean that he is not, you know, the all-powerful being he sees himself as.
Right. The disconnect for me in this plot, because it's pretty basic, is that at the end, Everything in this whole episode points to that Rick's doing this because he's angered that his grandson sees him as heroic and they're not. But like the noob joke kind of throws a monkey wrench in all that.
Yeah, that's one of the terrible things about this episode. And I don't mean that from a writing perspective. I mean that from a Rick perspective.
Right.
He writes everyone off in this blackout stupor that he's in and decides he's just going to kill them all. Right? I mean, Morty included.
Yeah, it seems like it.
And when you look at, you know, sober Rick versus drunk Rick, or I guess blackout Rick, sober Rick is trying to say, oh, maybe there's some kind of redemption here. You know, maybe Morty is the thing that he really cares about and we should put him on the platform and stuff like that, all while trying to deny that he cares, really.
Right. But it
turns out that that's not true, right? Like, he's willing to let Morty die. He's willing to, because Morty has shown his loyalty and his affinity for these Vindicators, Rick has written him off. Rick writes off anybody who disagrees with his own opinion because he views himself as the only person who could possibly be right about anything.
Yeah, the other way I was trying to look at it is this an interaction between, you know, let's call him Sober Rick. So, like, Sober Rick gets wounded because Morty looks up to the Vindicators more than he looks up to Rick, and that triggers Rick's jealousy and probably his like shame and loathing, which makes him take the decision to just get heroically drunk. Then once you've got blackout drunk Rick, then it's just random chaos because he can no longer form coherent thoughts, and like he like loses the like drunken Rick loses the plot of why he's doing this, and it just goes to like noob laughing at his joke. So it's like, I think there's a chance for Rick to legitimately have the higher message of he loves his grandson, he needs his grandson's approval and admiration. But because he doesn't get it, he becomes this other kind of like monstrous character who just, you know, shits himself and conceives of all these Saw-style puzzles. And by the time he gets to the end, he's like, he's not with it enough to even remember.
Yeah, it's funny because Rick, I think, would protest the statement I'm about to make, but he's a very sensitive person. Mm. Like, when people show that they both don't need him and also don't want him,
right,
he gets extremely defensive.
Right.
And he's extremely sensitive about it, and he, you know, says, fine, fuck you guys.
Right.
I don't need you either, and he goes into his drinking hole. And just turns into a monster.
I wonder if that says something about people that like have layers of like personal armor or walls that like, you know, they say that like, you know, that they're not that way. They're not weak. They're not sensitive, right? Because they've got all these walls and armor. But it could be that like, it's so rare that something gets through and penetrates it that when they do, they are super reactionary. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, it takes a lot to actually get through that and penetrate it, but if you ever do, the reaction is disproportionate to the injury.
Yeah, I think that's what we see in this episode.
I mean, it's a pitiful state because he clearly, you know, has a lot of strong emotions and passions about this, but he has no way to communicate those. Like, he's like, the idea that he just take Morty aside and be like, you know, I've been really thinking about what we talked about, and I want it, like, that just never occurs to him. He'd rather invent this death game involving three pointers. You know, also that, like, Morty realizes that all of the themes of Rick's puzzles are that you are not special. The thing that you think is makes you special doesn't make you special.
Yep.
And Rick is, and like, and once you, he can break you down to the not special category, then it's just who's more effective, and the answer is almost always Rick.
Oh yeah, in Rick's mind, it's always him.
Yeah. There is a detour into the whole Israel issue. Do you have any comments about?
No, he's very defensive about not being anti-Semitic.
Right. But also, like, as a person blackout drunk, he can, like, it's a weird reaction from Rick because he's very rarely, like, ashamed of himself. And here's something he's doing apparently often when he gets blackout drunk. He just starts ranting about Israel, not in a particular anti-Semitic way, but just in a, you know, he's concerned. I don't, I, I. he's probably concerned the same way he's concerned about 9/11 being a excuse to hijack our rights, right?
Okay.
Like, I don't think he thinks the Jews control the world. It's just more like, this has been an issue for as long as I've been alive, and nobody's fixing it. But probably when he's blackout drunk, who knows? Maybe he goes to some dark places. Maybe he's a little more anti-Semitic than he...
It's interesting that he's like, what did I say? What did I say about it, right? Like, does that belie some kind of anti-Semitism in his own mind that he just doesn't show to other people?
Right. Or has Birdman and, like, Bird Person, and Squanchy, like, took him aside one morning and be like, hey, man, it's some of the things you said last night were not cool, and he was as big a surprise to him as anybody.
Yeah, and now he just doesn't say them anymore, so he's all worried. I found it pretty... sort of insightful in a hilarious kind of way. I mean, Rick's, you know, when he shits. Okay, so first of all, this is a man who is complaining about the linens on the beds as a way to be like super petty about how shitty their ship is, whatever. You really think these people are going to put out the good linens for someone who's just going to shit all over them?
Yeah, it's true.
They know, man. They're not giving you the 2,000 thread count sheets. Sorry. But also... that line that Vance says when they're staring at his body and they say something about Rick says there is no good or bad or whatever. It's just a construct.
Right.
And Vance says something tells me he needs that to be true.
Yeah.
Which is pretty insightful because like Rick, I think if Rick were to reflect on a lot of his actions, not a lot of them would land in the good category under typical definitions.
Right. Even so, probably charitable definitions.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And so, you know, to keep, I guess, his own sense of self-worth, he kind of has to eschew those constructs, as he calls them.
Right.
Otherwise, his whole worldview would just crumble.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to, like, discuss in some kind of, you know, free speechy kind of, there are no things that are off limits to discussion, kind of like maybe they're in absolute universal terms. There isn't such a thing as good and evil. There isn't any like universal scorekeeper. It's like, you know, deducting points and giving credit. But that's a whole different conversation than saying, okay, that may well be, but now let's go with like what meaning we're bringing to the universe ourselves. What kind of order are we trying to pose on the universe? And you look at Rick and, you know, to what extent he's trying to pose any kind of order, it's to his own benefit. And a lot of times to many, many, many people's detriment. Like,
yeah,
you talk about the microverse, like potentially billions, if not trillions of people living as a detriment just to so he can start his car in the morning.
And he doesn't see that as bad.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also like the other thing about Rick and Morty is it's also like anytime you want to get too high and mighty about any of that stuff, you just reflect about like how we often is in, you know, first world countries, Western countries are kind of living a microcosm of that without really thinking about it. So,
yeah, true.
I like the part about Morty trying to disable the neutrino bomb. And Rick makes a comment about like how many neutrino bombs have you had to disarm anyway, and he's like, too many, Rick, too many. And this goes back to the pilot. Like the very first thing we see is Rick, you know, passing out as a neutrino bomb's going off, and you're like, was that the 40% that just don't work because Rick's too fucking drunk to make it work, or is that one of the first successes Morty had at disarming a neutrino bomb?
I would argue that even if he's just disarmed that one, it's too many.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, but Morty's right here.
Right. Disarming any amount of neutrino bombs as a 14-year-old is too many. And then at the end where you've got this giant, I guess the end of the episode felt like a little bit of rushed whatever. It's like, you know, the episode is done saying all the things it wanted to say. But you have to have some kind of resolution to where this thing is lifting up to. So why not have it be a party headlined by this logic guy that they're able to get into the studio? And
yeah, why not? It's
Beth
fun.
Is there. Some are like, he invited the like all the fan like Rick's a curiously high functioning blackout drunk in particular areas.
Yeah.
You know, he's able to coordinate all his party. Like, I wonder that's how he spent, like, the majority of his non-blackout time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, nursing the grudge against Morty and planning this elaborate party, and everything else was, you know, some type of blackout, drunk, diuretic, diarrhea work working.
Yeah, I mean, he solved the problems in, like, 2 hours, and he mm-hmm. had the rest of the year to go, so mm-hmm. planned a party. I mean, Rick in those moments, like, I know people who, like, smoke an amount of weed that would turn me into a vegetable and then just, you know, do their job mm-hmm. like all day. And mm-hmm. I don't understand how that works. Rick is one of those people, apparently. So I don't know. Good for him.
Reminds me of what Tyrion says in Game of Thrones about being an alcoholic. It's like, if it were easy, everyone would do it. it's hard work to put in the reps to get to that kind of high functioning place. I did like the, even though I kind of like indifferent about the ending of the episode, I thought the final joke where, you know, Rick's like, who the fuck is Noob Noob? Mm-hmm. Kind of bringing it full circle to sober Rick loses the plot of what blackout drunk Rick is doing in the same way blackout drunk Rick is doing is almost like another kind of identity that Rick has.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's got this whole relationship with Noob Noob and this whole, you know, rationalization process that sober Rick just doesn't have any memory of at all. And that was pretty, I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, poor Noob Noob. He gets shit on literally throughout the entire
episode.
That
scene where it's like it's going to be his first mission mm-hmm. and he's so excited. He's got all those guns and assault rifles and stuff, and Nova just turns it into a mop and bucket. We'll be pretty busy with this.
Along the lines of miscellaneous stuff, there's a really nice touch in all of these Saw style videos where you can kind of look in the background and see the remnants of Rick planning this elaborate Saw series of traps.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool, you know, and also he's ordered a pizza, like, he's just having a good time,
sure,
being super drunk and planning their doom.
Yeah, and it's only the stuff in retrospect that makes sense, because like you see like right. the cardboard cut out of the wings with the rainbow paint uh-huh. behind it and all that. So it's like, what the fuck? But then, yeah, when you finally get to the end, you understand it. I really like the conference room joke too. Like the conference room getting confused about what it calls itself and apologizing because it's got first day intercom jitters. I thought that was pretty. That's just Justin Roiland being crazy, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I assume they have an AI. It's like a Jarvis sort of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Doing their intercom work.
The other thing is, how much of these, I've been keeping track of like some of these side threats to Earth. Like in this one, there's these leeches that are crawling everywhere. And Rick's like, don't let any of these get away because it'll cause all like mammal life or all life to be sterile on Earth. Then the bird gets one and Rick makes a comment about, well, Morty, you better freeze some sperm while you still can. Are any of these ever going to like lead anywhere? Like, we're going to get in season 6 and like Rick's going to have a trial from like against humanity for all the shit that he's done to Earth.
Oh, like the end of Seinfeld or something.
Yes, that's the exact tone of what I'm trying to go for. Like the whole,
we totally could.
Yeah, like the series kind of like never takes it serious, but then there's a one point where like we're going to put our normal human hats and kind of review the absolute carnage, especially since it would be like whatever this Earth throws at Earth and some or at Rick in some kind of tribunal, it'd be dwarfed by the stuff it doesn't know about. Like the whole prosecution could rest at the Cronenberg incident, but there's probably no way of them knowing that that's actually a thing. Do you think that this is just a joke, or is some of this damage starting to accumulate?
I think they will revisit some of these things eventually. I mean, look, we got 7 seasons coming up at least. I think you have to revisit some of them. Now, will we get, you know, the Seinfeld style thing? I don't know.
Right.
But something's got to happen with this stuff.
In the same kind of vein, there's something I've been noticing about Rick's power creep. Like in this episode, we find out that he's got a nanoscale defense mesh embedded in his skin that essentially makes him invulnerable to like physical combat. Do you think there's ever going to be an issue with that where like all the different things that Rick has done throughout all the series essentially makes him like a Superman type of character who's like, we've talked about who's going to be his con, you know, Is it going to be evil Morty? Is it going to be one of this? But like, is it possible that they're his power level is going to creep up so much that like nothing can stop him?
Yeah, it's possible. I think they treat that stuff as sort of throwaway. Like you look at when he was fighting Zeep in the microverse, the teeny whatever the fuck verse it was,
right?
Inside his car battery, he definitely got punched a whole lot of times. And it didn't seem like his microfiber mesh was doing much.
Maybe
for
that's
him
why
there.
He installed it. He decided he never wanted to get in a situation where he's reduced to primitive technology and has to fisticuffs himself. Although I think he likes it. It seems like he does like kicking people's ass and spinning on them.
I think so. Yeah.
Because that happens in Star Trek too. Like Data will invent a way to make the shield 300 times stronger. Mm-hmm. To survive a solar flare that never feeds back into the rest of the episode. Like that never is like, oh, suddenly the Federation has a 300% advantage over the Romulans and shield strength, so they should just be able to instantly win any war. It's like, yeah, this technology, or oh, we can use our deflector ship to punch through a Borg cube. Now we got an Omega weapon. No, they always forget about it. I wonder, since Rick and Morty seems to be, among other things, kind of like a parody pastiche of these Star Trek, Doctor Who kind of things, maybe they'll roll the same way. It's like, well, just because Rick has a defense mesh in this net, or maybe he's got a laser eye in another, doesn't mean he'll always have that.
Yeah, I think everything I've taken away from what the creators have said is like, think of this like The Simpsons, right? Some things will evolve, some things won't, and it's going to be pretty arbitrary which ones we change and which we don't.
After the short break, we'll be back with writer and comedian for Screen Junkies, Honest Trailers, as well as co-host on Maximum Fun's Tights and Fights. It's Danielle Radford. We'll be right back.
And man, we gotta all give it up for Rick, because I mean, what kind of mother just sets up a whole festival like this when he's completely...
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. She writes for Screen Junkies Honest Trailers. She hosts and writes for fandom.com and does a podcast on a Maximum Fun network called Tights and Fights. It's all about wrestling. Welcome to the podcast, Danielle Radford.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I was scanning earlier this morning your Twitter feed, and I had a lot of fun because you're very funny, and I also like how you give people solid life advice. Like, you had this like public service announcement, like, hey, everybody, it's independent contractor, those net 30s stretching to net 45s and net 60s over the holidays, so you better save up a little so you don't get evicted on Christmas. That's solid yep. life advice. That's
just real. I forget about it. It was literally like I had a calendar reminder for myself because after last year, I promised I wasn't going to do that to myself again. And so when it came up, I was like, you know, I bet other people could also use the advice that it's time to start saving.
Yeah, it's great. It's neat. I also loved your advice for if you've got a burp that's not coming out, it's just not happening. You play the DuckTales mm-hmm. beat on your chest. And I'm like, wait, how's that work? And then I started doing the fist pump, fist pump, fist. Life is like a her. And I'm like, oh, that's yeah. it's that she's got it. She's got it.
It totally works.
And
yeah, I am a dummy. I'm glad you appreciate my dumb tweets.
Also, final thing. Well, actually, not final thing, because it turns out we have a ton of connections. Found out we're both Virgos. So represent.
Yeah.
And also,
holy crap.
Also,
what day are you?
31st, August.
Nice, 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 nice. Yeah. I was born on the Queen's Day, Beyonce's birthday. So,
wow, I saw. Yeah, that's like that's high society connection you got there.
Yeah, it's like me, the wrestler Xavier Woods, a couple of other wrestlers actually. A lot of wrestlers born on September 4th.
So we actually, before we did the phone call, I talked a whole bunch of history about, like, turns out we all have a hidden Indiana Hoosier connection, but I think the fans would like to know, like, what's your Rick and Morty history? Like, what's your connection to the show? When did you kind of discover it? You know, let's talk about it. Let's get into it.
Well, so I've been a fan of, like, a lot of Dan Harmon's work for years, and so I had not, I think it was, like, the first season, and this is going to be lame, and I promise you all out there, this is the first time this has ever happened to me, but I'm going to sound like a lame weirdo. My boyfriend introduced me to it. Normally, it's the other way around, but this was the one time when he was like, hey, are you watching this thing? It's, like, really funny, and it was right in the first season, and so he started telling me about it, and I was like, oh, that sounds like a fun, like, sci-fi parody, because I love genre stuff. And then he buried the lead about who made it. And so then I just started watching immediately.
What's your favorite episode? If I put you on a spot.
I mean, it has to be, it sucks now because like awful, horrible, lame people ruined it, but it's Pickle Rick. I think it's a great episode. I think it's very well written. I enjoy reading the tweets of the woman who wrote it, like talking about trying to explain it to her parents.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. And it just sucks that like, and I know from toxic fan bases, because I come from a video game background and a comic book background, a movie background. So I know a lot about toxic fan bases, but sometimes it's like, guys, you've got to chill. Like that dude at the McDonald's who had that mini
yeah.
freak out. And even if he was being ironic, it still sucks.
Yeah.
Just be a person.
That's a lot.
It sucks that that got memed. Yeah, it sucked that that episode got memed into being something kind of lame now because I love it.
And it's the other part of that episode, which I feel like is the better part of that episode, is so overlooked because of everything else. It's a
yes.
shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sigh.
We were talking before the podcast about like your superhero history, and it turns out like mm-hmm. you're like really kind of like, you know, plugged in that you were into the X-Men. I was a big X-Men fan back and I may be a couple years ahead of you, but that was like kind of peak X-Men because there were so many mutant books on the market. Were you like in like X-Men, X-Factor, X-Force, Uncanny? Like,
I read them all.
Yeah.
Generation X. I read, if it had an X in it, I was buying it that month.
Yeah.
Everything. Wolverine, everything. You know, Nightcrawler miniseries. I had it. Anything with just that era of, I mean, we all talk about obviously the pouches, but just that era of really ornate costumes covered in bomber jackets.
Yep.
It's very classic.
Yep. It's like a kind of who was behind that? Like, I think Jim Lee might have contributed the bomber jackets. The pockets was Rob Liefeld. He loved.
Can
he
I tell you?
Never saw a pouch.
I
or
met
a
him in an. No, I met him in an elevator at Comic-Con, not this year but last year, because he was staying at the hotel I was staying at. And I do have a brown purse, or at least I did at the time, that had a bunch of pockets and pouches on it.
Uh-huh.
And so I saw him and I was like, oh, hey, like, you know, I'm, you know, trying to be cool because I'm an industry professional.
Right.
I'm like, hey, like, you know, very nice to meet you. I'm a huge fan. And he goes, oh, thank you so much. I love your purse. A lot of pouches. And I was like,
He did not.
No, he did. He knows he's a meme. He knows exactly who he is.
Yeah.
If you go onto his Instagram, he has an original character that he always puts stuff in. It's called The Pouch, and it is just a man made, you know, talk about a million ants. It is a man made of like a million pouches. He knows exactly who he is.
Oh my God. Yeah, if you don't know Rob, he kind of became famous or infamous for his very peculiar art style. From that like 90s, early 2000s period. So you're probably like me, kind of excited when you saw, like, you know, Vindicators 3 come up and it's this kind of like comic book parody. Talk about the episode, what you thought of it.
It was one of those ones where I was like, is this specific? Did they do this on purpose? Just because of my background with superheroes and some of the writing and stuff that I do. Obviously, most of Rick and Morty gets really, really dark, but I feel like this was one of those episodes where we really got to explore, in particular, like the darkness of drunk Rick and the way that when you're, you know, getting real deep here, but when you're dealing with a family member who you love and you have to work around their afflictions, like their alcoholism or other things like that. Especially, you know, Morty's trying to disarm the neutron bomb and Rick's like, how many times? He's like, too many.
Yeah.
And so you really get into, obviously, like the love of in that relationship, and it gets into stuff about hero worship. And it's obviously a huge, I feel like a lot of creators these days are trying to find ways to simultaneously, and it's a really difficult balancing act, to both be like, hey, the superheroes are what people fucking pay money for. I'm sorry, can I say that?
Oh, yes.
Okay, cool. Superheroes are what people pay money for, and so we got to throw in something superhero related, but can we please just acknowledge that no one is paying for anything else? It reminds me of, have you seen Spider-Man Far From Home?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's that scene where Quentin Beck is like, you can be the smartest person in the room, you know, you can be the most intelligent person in the room, and if you don't have a cape, no one cares. So it's, you know, that kind of meta commentary, which I feel like, obviously, Vindicators 3 is really about the relationship between Rick and Morty and Rick's relationship with alcohol, but it's also, you know, obviously it's a commentary on the fact that, like, it doesn't matter what else anyone's doing or how smart you are, people only care about the dudes in capes that fly.
Yeah, I thought, going to your point about like the relationship between Rick and Morty, is what the interesting wrinkle here is, usually, you know, when Rick is being awful to Morty, they're kind of in like in an isolated situation. You know, usually the parents aren't around, they're in another dimension. And the wrinkle here is like, Morty could have, like, you know, forged a relationship with the Vindicators and maybe even jumped ship. And I wonder if that's what really brought the blackout, like trailer parked alcoholism that was on display, because like he maybe could have lost Morty. Now, it's interesting because it turns out the Vindicators are pretty shitty people, too. So who knows?
Yeah, they're the worst.
Yeah, like Vindicators 4, they do another planetary genocide, and maybe Morty's wanting to roll back with Rick. But I thought that was an interesting wrinkle, the fact that maybe what really threatened him is that Morty's getting out with other people and he could be replaced.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that that's a very tactic. And I don't think that I'm stretching anything to say that Rick is obviously a verbally abusive person. He loves people,
sure,
but he pushes them away because he's scared and he's slightly verbally abusive. It is one of the funniest parts of his character because he's very good at it. But that is the thing about, like, this is why this episode is dark to me, because unlike a lot of the other ways in which Rick and Morty can be dark, this is one of those ones where it's like, oh, this is about like an abuser's relationship with his abused and getting afraid that, like, you know, that's why abusers do isolate people, because they know that, oh, if other people, if they're exposed to something and people who are treating them better than I treat them and people who are maybe they think are better than me, then they'll leave me. That's, to me, that was what made it so dark, because not just like the killing and all that stuff, like that stuff's kind of standard, but in the way that it really did feel like, oh, this is about like an abuser and like the abused, but in a funny, lighthearted way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's like there's this point of you know, one of the classic things that he's doing is you know, he's just trying to prove a point. It's like there's right. not, you know, it's like he just the, and the point is you're not special. It's really the only thing that makes you special is that you hang around with me, and you should think about that.
and that's sober Rick. Like it's yeah. crazy to me that the alter ego yeah. of Rick, which I kind of look at it as like, you know, his Superman to his Clark Kent, except it's even more evil.
Yeah,
like that's the thing. It's even worse, right? Like drunken Rick doesn't care at all. Blackout Rick doesn't mm-hmm. care at all for Morty. Whereas sober Rick at least will, you know, have enough understanding of himself that he knows and he can admit when life, you know, life and limb are on the line mm-hmm. that maybe the thing that I, you know, couldn't do without is Morty. Maybe we should put him up there on that platform. Right. But Blackout Rick is just, he's on another level of evil. He's like a super villain to me.
Yeah. I mean, he even loses the plot. Like, you know, the whole point mm-hmm. is I'm scared to lose Morty, but by the time he's in his drunken blackout stage, it's all becomes about Nunu. And it's just coincidental that he weighs the same as or Noob Noob weighs the same as Morty, or they'd all have been blown up, or who knows what happens if he wired the bomb right.
And it's also what's funny is that like Rick also becomes like a super villain trope, which is what's hilarious, is because this is, you know, it's the superheroes and superheroes are lame and all that stuff. But he becomes Lex Luthor, like this combination of Lex Luthor and Toy Man. And they do it through like, oh, it's like Saw. No, this is very classically like Superman, you know, or the Riddler, or someone who uses their intellect as a weapon.
Yeah. I mean, by the end of this episode, he is the subtitle, right? He is World Ender. He's replaced World Ender.
He's World Ender Ender.
Yeah, he's both.
What I really enjoyed, one of the things I really enjoyed is how they poked kind of fun at superheroes without descending into parody. Like it's something that they talked about in the commentary track on the Blu-rays, is that they intentionally set out to make like all of these Vindicators are definitely like pastiches of comic book characters, but also like they were not supposed to like just be silly for the sake of it. Like you could conceive of like Supernova being in an actual, you know, a comic book. You could conceive of, I don't know about Million Ant-Man, that'd be maybe a weird Dark Horse Image project, but like
Alan, that one's definitely Vertigo.
Yeah, Alan Rails, you can see that as like this kind of a Ghost Rider, Batman, haunted by his mm-hmm. past type of character. If they do a Vindicators 4, because Vindicators 3, we're much like we're with the real life Avengers, the team is essentially decimated. There's only like what Nova is the sole surviving member of the Vindicators, mm-hmm. a Noob Noob, of course. Mm-hmm. So you got that core to build around. Vindicators 4, who's your pick for new Rick and Morty superhero? Let's do some conceptual brainstorming here.
Well, see, what I love about this, and one of the things I loved about it, is a lot of times when people do the parodies, it's just straight up like, you know, I love The Boys. I think that that's a great series. Mm. But you can see exactly what they're doing and who each of those characters is supposed to be.
Sure.
Like, it's almost like a 1-1 kind of parody. And what I appreciate about The Vindicators is that you can kind of see some of that, but some of it is just like them having, like, creative fun. And you can just throw, you know, any two things together almost and make like another one. I would love if they, you know, had some kind of character who maybe they travel through the internet and that's their thing. And that's how they know people, because they're omniscient and they can go through the internet, and they would have like a very silly name like Netboy. Crocbot is amazing because that's literally like two things. You take a crocodile and then a robot and then you throw them together, and that's amazing. So I think any form of you take an animal and then something else and then you throw it together. So maybe it could be an animal that could be inside the internet, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking, how about 1,000 squirrels?
Yes.
You don't need as many to make the same equivalent body mass.
Yeah,
they're pretty big.
One of the tropes that I enjoy about comic book is the like indestructible person, but they still feel it all. Like a classic is Wolverine. Like there's a lot of like Wolverine monologuing as he's getting, I don't know, the adamantium pulled out of a skeleton by by Magneto, or he's getting like the flash flamethrower off his bow, and he's like, he's always so jaded, like, you know, his samurai sword's going through his guts, and he's like, fool left himself open to my schnick. I would love to see kind of like those quote unquote invincible but still wounded, vulnerable heroes, and like you know, catching him monologuing about his life and torment and all that. That'd be a very.
I will say, if you think that something like that would be really funny, there was during when Marvel still had their Max line, I want to say it was Garth Ennis did a Punisher, a run on Punisher, and one of them was just how many different ways he could comically beat the shit out of Wolverine, and not just like the Punisher, but like all of these different characters. And so by the end of it, Wolverine is just like barely hanging on, and everything that happens to him is violent and hilarious.
Yeah. That's
definitely worth looking up.
I got to check that out. Because that's the other one, is the other archetype that I felt like was not represented is the just straight up vigilante, you know, the anti-hero, the Punisher.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, sufficient, like if there's a sufficient world ender, maybe they, because that was always like the fun, quote unquote fun team up, is like when Spider-Man would get thrown in with the Punisher because they're having to take down a greater threat in New York City. It's like, you know,
I feel like maybe Rick is supposed to be that in this episode, at the start, because they call them in, right?
Yeah,
they need Rick's help.
Not drunk Rick.
Oh my god!
No.
Oh my god! You're right. Rick is the more nihilistic Punisher.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he?
Well, and I mean, Morty is he is Spider-Man, like flat out he is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And in fact, there are times when I've talked about it, I am convinced that sometimes Tom Holland is just, well, he's not doing Morty, he's rocking his Back to the Future, but he is just straight up doing that voice sometime, even with like the same like crack in it, like during Infinity War when he goes, Mr. Stark, it smells like a new car in here, and he's just doing like Morty.
I can see that for sure. Are you familiar with Scud the Disposable Assassin?
Yes.
Okay. Because that's like Rob Schraub wrote, and I didn't even illustrate that, this series about this cyborg assassin, and he's a big buddy with Dan Harmon. In fact, I guess he was responsible for directing a lot of the season 4 stuff that's coming out, I gather, from being a fan of the Harmontown podcast. But I wonder if there could be like a handshake deal where Scud can appear as a character.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Didn't Scud have just like a crap ton of action figures too, because you could do a bunch of different stuff with the body parts, or am I thinking of something else?
I don't know if it ever got big enough to have an action figure. Certainly, because I discovered Scud like after it was already said and done. Like that, I think it wrapped up in 98, and I just it was me listening to Harmontown, and I remember there was one particular Comic-Con where Schraub's whole play, like his whole mission was to get rid of every last copy of Scud that he's still had, you know, trying to blow them out. So I'm like, so I got the whole shebang collection, was trying to work my way through. But I think that would be fun, and a nice little Dan Harmon connection too.
That would be really fun. That's a great character. Yeah, no, there was a figure, and it had like a bunch of points of articulation because that's the way that he's built.
Yeah, you'd have to. I could totally see it translating.
Hey, so I want to talk about that Logic cameo at the end.
Yeah.
I want to hear that whole song, first of all. I like the way that they look, because Logic is black, but no one knows that. So I'm just like, not to disparage my light-skinned brethren, but he's black and no one knows it. And they did a really good job picking a shade for him, because I was wondering how they were going to do it, because he does just pass as a white dude. But they did manage to pick a shade, which makes him look not totally white, which was amazing. But yeah, that song was great. I loved when it came out. It was like, have I got paid yet? The huge party. We gotta, you know, shut up, summer. The party sequence at the end was amazing. I really enjoyed that. And I like when you can have a cameo like that where it's not the selling point of the episode. It's just kind of a fun thing that happens. They're not trying to do a big like, ooh, guest starring Logic.
Yeah, he just comes out of nowhere at the end. Mm-hmm. I wonder, because I know if you go to like the Home Depot or Lowe's, you can take like a sample of something and they put it in a machine and it like spits out the exact color that thing is. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's how they color match Logic. I say, hey, can you put your hand in here? Bing! Oh yeah, you get the 2 ounces of the burnt sienna with the white, and it's the perfect tone.
I think that you can do that. There's a makeup counter where they have, I think it's prescriptives. This is real, where they'll like run this thing on your face that does the same thing as, I guess, the Photoshop picker tool.
Yeah.
And then they'll pick out a foundation for you based on that. So
that's probably more likely. I think they all have Photoshop. They probably didn't drag him to Home Depot. They just used the color picker tool.
But see, in my headcanon, now it's Logic and Home Depot both getting color typed and trying to figure out if he's allowed to make a copy of his key that says "Do not copy."
Yeah, that's one of the great. You know, it's like that and tearing off your tags off your furniture. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need the legality of this debated.
I'm gonna do it. It's my furniture.
Who's gonna turn you in? Where can people mm-hmm. find you on the internet, Danielle? And is there anything that you wanna? What's your? I know you're a part of the Maximum Funds. What is it? Tights and Fights. Tights is the intersection of the superhero, and you got the fights with the wrestling. I guess Tights and Fights is all. It mm-hmm. could be superhero or mm-hmm. wrestling, but it is wrestling.
It could be. But yeah, this is specifically wrestling. We talk about all of it. We're talking about Japan, WWE, AEW coming up. So it's me, Hal Loveland, who is a voice actor. He plays Wide Whale on Venture Brothers. He's great and amazing. He has his own podcast as well.
Very cool.
Lindsay Kelk, who is a romance author from England, who loves wrestling. And then we also have, not as much as we'd like, because he's like famous, but we also have Mike Eagle on, rapper Open Mike Eagle. And so, yeah, that's it. And then we'll have some guests and do some fun stuff. And that is something I enjoy. I'm also, again, I am on Screen Junkies. I help write the Honest Trailers. And then on Fandom, I am one of the hosts of SJU, which is Screen Junkies Universe. And you can also just find me. I work for Nerdist sometimes doing junkets and interviews. And I'm kind of all over the internet because I'm freelance. So you can buy me.
and make sure you pay her over Christmas because those net 30s, they should be ironclad. I did not know that Open Mike Eagle is one of your guys' co-hosts on the wrestling pod. I've really enjoyed his attempts to tutor Dan in bettering his freestyle rap when he comes on Harmontown. Those are some of the highlight episodes.
Yeah, no, Mike is great. He's a huge wrestling fan. He fell off because WWE has done some really, and I think we were all really happy to embrace. There's a new company coming out called AEW, and I think we're really happy to embrace it because WWE has been shadier and shittier than they usually are in terms of the way they treat their talent and in terms of like doing weird, you know, getting paid a lot of money to do weird shows and then bringing back racists, and we're all not super down with it. Plus also just like it's something new and exciting.
Yeah, it's funny because I keep my hand a little bit in wrestling because my dad was and is still a huge fan. And I remember I watched a lot of that in my youth with him. So I still kind of like keep, and I've gotten the impression that a lot of people are over the McMahon brand of wrestling.
I mean, it's still good. And the people who work there are great. And when they do stories right, they really hit it out of the park. They've got the money to do it. They can afford to do it. But they wind up, they're so busy chasing, you know, the Attitude Era and what is known of as the glory days that they're not really spending a lot of time investing in newer talent, in except for when they have to. Mm. And so that can be a bummer. And so I think all of us are kind of like, let's look more to the future of this business because you're now booking people who don't have knees anymore. Mm. And I don't want to watch necessarily two 60-year-old men fighting for 10 minutes. I don't think that that's really interesting or good. So, so Mike, because of then bringing back Hulk Hogan and all this stuff, he's been taking a break from that, but he's really into like New Japan right now and AEW. So when we do big AEW shows, he always comes back and shows up, which is great because we miss him.
Daniel Radford, we will put your contact information in show notes if people want to jump on there and follow you along. Thanks for coming on the podcast. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Human music. I like it.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. All right, Jim, are you ready to plot to the future?
Yeah, I'm ready.
This is, of course, where we take our portal guns, tune them to Dimension BM77, and look ahead for behind-the-scenes details, spoilers for future episodes, etc., etc. Did you know that this is Rick and Morty's second MA, TV MA rating?
Oh, I didn't.
That it earned for its use of fucks, which I find bizarre because when it airs with all the fucks bleeped.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something that like Cartoon Network sends the episode through just to get rated and then regard like it bleeps them? Like, I'm not sure why it does that.
That's strange.
Yeah. Does it ever air it at a later date without the, I mean, I know if you watch it on Cartoon Network's website, usually not bleeped.
Or
if you watch
Blu-rays,
them on the Blu-rays, or if you watch them on, you know, if you purchase this episode, the season through like Amazon or iTunes, like they're not bleeped.
Mm-hmm.
So like, how the fuck did it get in TVMA if it bleeps all if it's fuck use?
I don't know, man.
Another thing is it looks like Crocubot, or the race that Crocubot is based on, is going to return at some point in season 4. And
that's a shame. He's the least interesting of the superhero characters.
Well, see,
in
that's
opinion.
What I'm wondering. Like, it's obvious that like Dan and Justin know this because that's the joke. The fact that like you take two awesome things together, crocodiles and cyborgs, and you put them together and they're less literally less interesting than the sum of their parts.
Mm-hmm.
So like, is that going to like, what's the plot point that brings them back? Are they mad that they had like a thriving superhero career and then like Rick blew up their spot? Like now everybody realizes like, well, these are just less interesting. These are either less interesting robots or crocodiles. Either way, you do more with more croc than bot, or more bot than croc.
I guess it's like if the Kryptonians, like if you splatted Superman, like you just crushed him between, you know, two objects, which you obviously couldn't do to Superman unless you were superpowered yourself.
What if they were two giant hunks of kryptonite?
Yeah, let's say you create a kryptonite platform and it smashes Superman.
Okay.
The Kryptonians would probably be pretty pissed, right? Like,
sure.
This was our hero. Like, mm-hmm. They'd be Morty in this situation. Like, Rick, what the fuck did you do to our hero?
So they're the Crocubot was the best of them.
Right.
So they're wanting revenge.
Could be.
Okay. All right.
That's just my back of the envelope idea, which there were a lot of back of the envelope ideas. Actually, some of them really good for this episode.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Arrow Girl?
Oh, it's such a shame that this stuff got cut.
So one of the A plot of this episode is supposed to be the fact that like Morty kind of had this romance with one of the other Vindicator episodes that takes place off air,
mm-hmm.
between this Arrow Girl who since the last one had become Arrow Woman, mm-hmm. or I think they call her Quiver.
They do.
So like, you know, girl, this conceit, the girls mature faster than boys. And as a result, Morty felt like he had to keep up. So he had Grandpa Rick essentially, soup up his, robotic murder suit that they wore in the Look Who's Purging Now.
Mm-hmm.
And what I guess happened was there's a love triangle where Arrow Woman fell in love with the suit because the suit is much more capable and sophisticated and suave than Morty himself.
Uh-huh.
That sounds like a pretty fantastic idea for a plot.
I think so. Now they do mention, you know, that sometimes these things get pulled out and created, and actually given new life in another episode. I'm kind of hoping that happens at some point, because now we have the concept of the Vindicators.
Yeah, come back with Vindicator 6, and you just do it. You'd have to explain, like... But I think there's actually even a great reason to do that, because we in real life, quote-unquote real life, have just lived through the first kind of like complete phase of Marvel where damn near everyone in the Avengers got mothballed, killed, rolled up, retired, and they're having to start all over again. So like that could be a part of the joke is the Avengers 6 is you've got a whole new cast of like slightly less interesting characters. For example, Arrow Girl could be kind of a Hawkeye reference, and Hawkeye I think is widely held as the least interesting Avenger, so it's almost built in meta commentary that you're starting a whole other Vindicators based on the people that didn't make the cut the first time.
I think there's a lot of potential for an episode like that, and I hope we see something around that idea eventually.
They also mentioned other, like they had Dr. Reach, which is kind of like a Reed Richards also two conjoined twins that were brother and sister that was going to be Dan described as like the incest version of ambiguously gay duo, like, oh, they have a strong brother sister bond and they're inseparable literally and they sleep in the same bed, and is this a Lannister type of thing or
but I
could see that being funny.
Maybe but I think some of these were cut we're smart cuts to make.
Like
a knitting grandma. I don't know how you're going to get a knitting grandma superhero, but maybe that could be funny.
I thought that it's interesting that they had this dilemma where Rick is all portrayed as always, he's never sober, like in the kind of Alcoholics Anonymous sense of the word. He's at some layer of inebriated the entire time. And Justin Roiland, the creator and the voice of Rick, also frequently hammered in his voice recordings sessions. So they had the idea, like, how do you, you've already used all your ammunition and just your steady, so how do you perform a heroically drunk or a blackout drunk Rick? And I guess one of the solutions was they just got Justin, like, completely plastered. There's a couple of, I don't know if it's on the Blu-rays or if I just saw this as a YouTube clip, but there are clips of, the people that are coaching him in the voice acting. Like, he's like, you think I need another drink? And they're like, no, Justin. And he's just like guzzling and like, oh, Jesus. It didn't seem like it was a especially productive use of their time. On the other hand, Justin proclaimed like that half of his reads that made it to the screen were from that recording instance. I don't know. Of course, if he was blackout drunk, then how would he know?
I mean, he could listen to the recordings afterward.
True, but how would he know which of the? I don't know. I was just thinking
whatever he doesn't remember came from the blackout session, right?
So it's like I'm like at one point if he's like in the recording booth and he's naked and he's covered in shit, like you know, how would he know which tape came from which session? Whatever. It seemed like it worked. Like, I think that the way it works is like Rick is a high functioning alcoholic, so when he's drunk, he's still on his game. The way they got the performance is it's not much of a performance, it's all in the writing. Like the fact that, oh, I'm sleepy, I need to shut my eyes. Losing the kind of the plot, like that's not Rick like. So you don't need him to sound especially drunk, it's just he's acting especially drunk.
Yeah, one of the more interesting, I guess, writing points that Dan was talking about in this commentary was the idea of sort of telling the audience that nothing is sacred. It's like a sort of Game of Thrones type thing. Nothing is sacred except for the things that are, because if you truly say nothing is sacred, then people are going to tune out and go to another show because nothing means anything in this show. So you have to keep, you have to walk that tightrope between like subverting everything that people expect, but also giving them enough to grab onto to keep them watching the show. And this show walks that line so perfectly because I could see, you know, an Avengers style episode in a lesser show just being eye-rolly, like either going too far to try and make their points or, you know, just playing it too much like a hokey version of Avengers.
Yeah.
And look, you know, just lampooning it in a way that's not funny because it's been so overdone. So I don't know. I think they nail it. You know, it's telling that Dan thinks about these things a lot when he's writing.
Also, I think one of the reasons that when they do these kind of pastiches that work so well is it's not just like an Avengers parody, because this is like an Avengers parody seen through the lens of Saw. Mm-hmm. And in that role, Morty is kind of like the trope of the like serial killer whisperer or the criminal profiler. He's the Agent Starling. He's whatever the guy is from Hannibal. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of that character, but he's that way only with blackout drunks, that only he knows what Rick's bizarre ritual means here, and only he knows what, like, and part of that funny stuff is the specificity, which is, like, you know, the fact that Rick knows, or Morty knows, that when Rick gets drunk that he starts babbling about Israel. Yeah. So, like, I kind of thought that's one of the things is, like, it's not where the superhero parody starts to flag, then the kind of true crime Hannibal slash Saw stuff starts to pick up, and yeah, vice versa.
And even just the deep dive into Rick, you know, Rick's mind, which always is a good crutch for this show to lean on.
Right. And then again, like, I just really love that where you just got the human drama of, yep, like, these lovers, but now they're superpowered. So they're talking about, you know, did you like his 6 million wriggling legs inside of you? And, you know, the line where Nova's got, like, yes, and there was a life inside of me, but it died because it was half million ants and half collapsing star. Like, that's just, and then her, you know, all of the fact that she rips his heart out and it's actually the Ant Queen.
The way A-Train dies, or not A-Train, sorry, yeah, that's a different show.
Yeah, Alan Rails.
Alan Rails dies.
Yeah, getting exploded by a million ants, by death by million ants explosion.
Yeah.
It's good.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com. to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @BaldMove. See you next time.